Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Paramahansa Yogananda, be with us this evening. Guide our thoughts. Expand our hearts. Help us find our true joy in your infinite bliss. Om. Peace. Okay, is there anybody who was not here last week? A few people, okay. Recordings are available? Yeah, so I would recommend listening to those. The classes in this course, to a large extent, stand alone as individual lessons, but there was also just a good overview of the whole course and where it came from and tying it all together, which is worth hearing, and then it was also an excellent lesson. So you can catch up on that when they're posted online. But in short, these lessons, they all come from our line of gurus here via Swami Kriyananda, the founder of Ananda, as a way to apply ancient yogic techniques to our lives that we live every day and showing that they're not just airy-fairy things for spiritual people who want to run away and not be involved with the world. They actually improve and enhance every aspect of our life, even the apparently material, mundane aspects of our life. And so that's the general concept. Tonight's topic is kindness. And under the heading of that one word, we're going to cover a number of different fascinating subjects. And for my part, before we get... the one other bit about just the format is we'll talk for maybe an hour at most, and then we'll reconfigure in a circle and we can all have a discussion. So, but you're welcome to ask me questions as I talk as well, too. I don't mind. So on our way to talking about how kind we will be to other people, we have to take a moment and take a good hard look at ourselves, and specifically at what we call the ego. And the ego is a word that we all probably have at least some vague general idea of what it means, but Yogananda gave a very good, very specific definition, a way to think about it. The ego is a soul identified with a body. So our souls are the part of us that, as the Bible said, we're made in God's image. God was not made in this physical image, otherwise we'd be able to find him somewhere and take a picture of him. But it's our soul that is in God's image in that it's infinite, it is eternally blissful. And then, through the miracle of birth, it comes down here, it finds a human body, it puts it on like an overcoat, and it starts thinking that's what it is. It forgets that it's infinite. It forgets that it's eternally blissful. It thinks, I've got this little arm. I've got this little arm. I've got these senses. And it starts only paying attention to the information coming in through these particular eyes and these particular ears and focusing everything right around this body. And then naturally, it starts observing everything else that it can observe in this world and noticing how those things affect this body in different ways. And it starts deciding whether it likes some of these effects or whether it doesn't like some of these effects. And since this has become its entire reality, it all just becomes, you know, huge, all-encompassing, this body, these experiences, this is all of reality. And it decides it likes some things and doesn't like others, when really all it's reacting to is information coming through the senses, not even the things themselves out there. My favorite example that my Meditation 1 students hear all the time is olives. Okay. Who likes olives? Okay, that's a pretty good number of hands. There are very few foods I will not eat, and olives are pretty much right there on the list. Can't stand them, will not touch them, will pick out tiny little bits of whatever they're in and just can't do it. But same olive, cut in half, give me half, give you half. I detest it. You like it. What's the difference? It's not the olive, right? It's not the olive's fault. And we're pretty used to thinking about that in terms of food because we all kind of have preferences. But one of the things that Yogananda taught us is that conditions are always neutral. Not olives are always neutral. Not food is always neutral. Conditions, actually, everything is always neutral. And the only thing that changes and makes things good or bad is our internal reactions to it. If you want another source, if you need another source, Shakespeare. There's nothing in this world either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. Shakespeare tapped into some pretty good stuff when he was writing his plays. And so one of the things we learn along the spiritual path is, okay, what really is going on in here that makes me react to all of these things, and how can I have some sort of control over my own experience? And even if we're not on the spiritual path, we start to find that there are occasional little hints about what else could work. And one of them that happens to most people sooner or later is falling in love. And what happens a lot of time when you fall in love? What are you thinking about? Thinking about whichever other person you happen to be in love with, right? And when you get to see them next, maybe the nice present you could get for them, maybe the nice dinner you're going to cook, maybe the date you're going to plan together, you're thinking about them all the time. Being in love is also one of the happiest times in most people's lives. It's the type of time most people have the fondest memories of, and they're just blissful, joyful. We use all these words when we talk about being in love. And what are we thinking about? We're thinking about somebody else. What are we not thinking about? We're not thinking about whether or not we like olives and whether or not we can actually eat this pizza because somebody put olives on it and ruined my day because I love pizza but I hate olives. We might even order olives on the pizza if our sweetie happens to like them. And we will pick them off without thinking too much about it and still have a great time, even though somebody put olives on our pizza. And the hint there is that what did we start dropping when we got happy? It was our ego. It was the bit that this is me, this is important, what affects this body. There's a sensation about olives on the tongue, and I defined it as bad, and so that's going to make my day good or bad. No, we just let that go. We're thinking about somebody else. We've expanded our sense of self to include somebody else. Having children is another one that comes up for a lot of people. Because children can be all-consuming. I don't have any, but I've been one, and I've observed them. it gives you something else to think about. And when you're not being a harried parent, you're really loving it because you're loving them, and your focus is on them, and you're expanding your heart. You're expanding your awareness to include this other person, and to include a whole family. So these are the hints that life gives us. And the more we start piecing these together, the more we start then noticing how, oh, wait, there are spiritual teachings that tell us the same thing. Look, there are all these different ways we can work with this and expand our sense of identity and sort of escape all these things that always seem to be happening to us. Like when somebody seems to hate us because they accidentally put olives on our pizza, but they don't. It's just something that happened. And as we do this, as we expand, it's not like we become completely bland and nothing is ever interesting because it's all just boring, flat, neutral. We still have an involvement in our life. We can still act and make decisions. But it's in a different sort of way. It's realizing that, okay, maybe we have a responsibility to this body or, to perhaps these other little bodies that we gave birth to and have to take care of, and they're perfectly reasonable and enjoyable things to do in the world, but we don't have to identify with them. The spiritual masters on the wall see this body as just equivalent to a shirt that we put on, and we may be wearing our favorite shirt, and if it spills some, we spill something and we have to clean it up, we'll do our best job and we'll try and take care of the shirt, but we'd probably look askance at anybody who got thrown into a major depression because they got a stain on their shirt, and then they quit their job because they could only stay home and mope because now their life is ruined because their shirt got a stain. That's identifying too far. But you know, you do what you can, and if you end up having to throw out the shirt, well, too bad, but there will be other shirts. That's how our bodies are to the masters. And that's what we can think about, and it's kind of a stretch for most of us. But this is something that's going on, and we can take care of it, and we can do our best at living this life, but we don't have to identify it with it. And if something bad happens, we can take it, we can react appropriately for whatever the situation is, and then we can move on, whether it was good or whether it was bad. Swami Kriyananda had a great phrase. He said, speaking of himself, "I see Swami Kriyananda as an event for which I am responsible." You know, so he's still completely involved in his life, but he went through many, many great ups and downs, successes and trials and everything, and he always maintained a center of bliss. Just his baseline was, hey, you know, I know my soul is infinite bliss, this stuff is happening, we'll just do our best, it's all good. If we go back to the falling in love example, something unfortunately that we see happening sometimes is that we'll then turn around. I don't know if we just get used to being in that state and need to experience something else, but you'll see a lot of times people will stop thinking so much about the other person and start thinking, what? Well, I'm in love with this person. Maybe they need to take care of me in certain ways. And maybe I didn't like that thing that they did because I think they should have done something else. And uh-oh, what happened? We're thinking about ourselves again. We're drawing everything back to the ego, taking that as the primary source of what we define as good and bad. And what happens at that point? Is it as much fun being in love? Yeah. It starts going downhill. And that's when, and if you're still paying attention, you notice that, oh, when these things start happening, you feel a decrease in freedom. A lot of people like to define freedom as I can do what I want to do, whatever it is I want to do. But there are two questions you have to ask in response to that. One is, why do you want to do that? Where did that come from? What's motivating the desire? And two, what happens when you don't get it? Because there are 7 billion people in the world and we're all trying to get what we want. And they're going to run into each other a lot of the time. It's not always going to work out. So if you don't get what you want, what happens? Do you throw a fit, get all upset, mope for 3 days? Is that freedom? I mean, do you really want to do that? Probably not. And so again, if we're paying attention, we notice, okay, the more I was focused on me, what I want, what I get, the less happy I was getting, because it's not always going to happen. The more I was focused on somebody else, the more expansive I feel, the more free I feel, because hey, we can just enjoy it all. It doesn't matter what's happening to me. We can just enjoy it. There's an interesting example from my own family in my two grandmothers. And one grandmother is still alive, and her health has been declining for a number of years. And to be fair, she's got a lot of difficult stuff going on, and it's been going on for a long time. Her method of dealing with that has been contractive, and she's thought more and more about how it's affecting her, what medicines she should take when, and like dosing herself with tranquilizers to not have to deal with it, and the extent to which she relates to the rest of the family is increasingly along the lines of what can they do to help me. My grandfather had a heart attack, and she was pretty quickly agitating for him to come home so he could take care of her again. My grandfather's up for it, but this is, and you can feel it when we're around her. As much as we love her, there's just this boom energy, and it draws everybody sort of down. And it's difficult. It's difficult for her, and it's difficult for us. My other grandmother died some years ago, and she spent the last 16 years of her life with the doctors telling her she was about to go pretty much any minute. Literally, you know, every once in a while she'd go to the doctors, they say, you got 3 months, maybe, and she'd go, okay. And she'd go back home and just carry on with everything she was doing. She volunteered with her church. She, you know, helped out the other people around her retirement home. She wrote letters to everybody she ever met in her life all around the world. She kept thinking about other people because this is what her whole life was like. She built up the habit, which is an important help to that. And she basically just loved the heck out of everybody who came in front of her all the time. And it was great, you know, even to the point in the last few years where she couldn't move around very much, she'd just write even more letters and send them out to people. And she was always beaming, and she was always loving, and her energy was always out there with other people. And I saw her just a couple days before she died, and she couldn't move out of her bed. She was out of breath just trying to talk, but she was just beaming. And there was no regret, there was no fear, there was just love. And she died a couple days later, and you know, we were all sad, but the reaction was also kind of, you know, well done, Grandma Jackie. You know, that's the way to go. And it was just such a, yeah, I don't think I completely realized what I was witnessing at the time. It's more since then that I've gone, wow, that was really something. But just these two such stark contrasts, you know, we can learn from both sides. You know, you see, you know, you have a choice. Every moment of your life, you have a choice. You're going to expand or you're going to contract. And if you do this for 85 years, as these two women have done, this is where they lead, the two of them. And if you take my Grandma Jackie's example and just imagine, you know, she's there. She has a body that's completely falling apart. But she has a world that includes the grandchild going off to college, the nephew getting married, these people who are sending their pictures of their vacation, this person who just had surgery, so she's taking soup to him, all this stuff. And in the middle of this great big happy world, okay, there's this one body that happens to be her that is falling apart. It's still there, and she still did whatever doctors told her to, except, you know, die. And she took care of it to the best she could, but it was just a small part of the picture. Whereas if you've contracted and that's the entire picture, then and you can imagine, it's miserable. The masters on the wall and great saints of all paths have taken that to the nth degree. If you can imagine, how far can you imagine expanding that to be completely identified with everybody and everything and afraid of nothing? Fun thing is, it starts with kindness because it was reaching out to other people, connecting to other people, caring about other people that my grandmother practiced throughout her life and just kept that going, expanding the whole time. And in a more general sense, also tonight we're going to talk about working with the heart's feelings in general, not just kindness, but kindness is a very particular central aspect of that. There are some spiritual paths that are very, very intellectual, and especially around Silicon Valley, you have a lot of people who can be kind of into that. They can, they come from brainy, engineering type backgrounds, a lot of them, and that's what's easy for a lot of folks to grasp. But it can get lopsided if you don't have a balance with your heart as well. And in fact, it can get wayward isn't quite the word, but a little directionless, because what actually happens is our minds follow our hearts, intellect follows feeling. And we like to think that we're rational creatures and we just reason out everything and then we make the best decision. But think about it. Have you ever tried to convince somebody of something that they really didn't want to believe? Is that easy? No. Have you ever had somebody try to convince you of something that you really wanted to believe? Did you even listen to their arguments? Yeah, probably not that well, right? If our hearts get fixed on something, we can come up with all sorts of rationalizations that may make no sense to the people telling us that this didn't work the last 20 times we tried it. But we're going, no, I know it's going to work now. I feel it because our hearts have gotten caught up in it and our minds running along after it. So it's important to have an idea of what our hearts are doing. And help direct them in the right way, because if we direct our hearts along with our aspirations, the intellect will follow along as well. And with that, I'm going to pass it on to Lahari, who will be talking to us about the arts. And she will tell you why.
Good evening, everyone. I know most of the people in the room, but some of you I haven't yet met. So my name's Lahari, and it's been my great good joy to be at Ananda for about 26 years. After a while, you sort of stop counting every little year, but it's about 26 years. And I'd like to just start off tonight by sort of basking a little bit in the kindness that's behind the lesson, since we're talking about kindness tonight, and the kindness and generosity of Swami Kriyananda, who is Ananda's founder, as Tandava mentioned, in writing these lessons. And the situation you probably heard in the first night, he's in the hospital, someone says, "How can you help me?" even though he's on his sick bed. And he responds by writing these lessons, the original material success lessons. And that hallmark of kindness is something that he used in founding Ananda. And as I was sitting in the room, I thought, what can I contribute? There's so much in these lessons. You're all reading them. Other people are talking. Maybe we'll just all sit and just look at each other and bask in the kindness of each other and what little we know of each other and what we know of Ananda. You know, just sort of say something kind to each other and look at each other and think of the kindness we've received from one another. You know, because this community models this kindness in so many ways. As I was preparing for this, my husband and I are part of a new Ananda adventure, which is a farm out by Half Moon Bay. And as with all new things, lots of things happen at once. And we were finding ourselves forgetting to do some of the kind things to ourselves, like take a little time off, and we were getting a little bit overwhelmed. At least I was. I finally had to say, "Husband, would you be kind to me and take me away?" He is a very kind husband, so we can laugh about it, and we did. But just before we went away, we had to get up early. It was another stretch after many, 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 many stretches, and we just didn't know we could do another stretch, but we had to do it anyway. So we got up and we got ourselves ready, and we were headed toward the temple, and we stopped in the drive-through line of Starbucks. And I knew kindness lesson was coming up. And so we got in the line and we drove up, and you know, we made our little order, skinny mocha and whatever else we had. And we thought, okay, this will help us get through the morning. And I couldn't say we were really grouchy yet, but it was just under the surface where we could have been grouchy. You know, we had to sort of remind ourselves not to be grouchy because, you know, here's my beloved mate. And, you know, just because something happened in the car, whatever it was, I don't even remember, but it's like, okay, I will not be grouchy. So we drove up to the window. The nice girl there had a big smile that day. And she said, don't pay us. Don't pay me. The person in front of you just paid for you. You know, and I remember those stories that were going around for a while, random acts of kindness. And I just thought, that is so sweet. I felt so good. I mean, my energy went from, oh boy, I'm just barely making it today, I'm going to just keep going, to, oh, that was so nice. And I looked and it was like, that was very sweet. And then I thought, you know, you may be sort of at the end of your rope, but remember, we want to pay for the people behind us. It's like, oh yeah. And then I got to feel that second joy of, they're going to have that same joy that I just felt. You know, their day's going to be brightened. You know, and it was a simple little thing. I mean, it was really simple, but it was like a little wink from Divine Mother saying, you know, okay, you're starting to tune into kindness. This is a lesson that's coming, and here it is. Look how it feels. You know, this is it. Here's a little gift for you. And that's a small thing. But as I started thinking about kindness, I started thinking kindness is like that little small thing, but actually it's that little step that can make all the difference, because kindness really is an expression of love, which, as Tandava was saying, can be love to the beloved, love for the baby, anything that makes our hearts really expand and feel that joy of appreciating another person and giving to that person, being an instrument of giving to that person. And with a little bit of kindness, we step into that. You know, in the Bible, the first, whatever, two or three commandments have to do with love. And it's very much a part of the spiritual life of how do we expand ourselves. It's by caring and loving and thinking of others. And this kindness, it just a little, you know, it's so easy to do something small that's kind. I mean, that was kind of a big thing. They paid for our lattes, $6 or whatever it was. But even just to say something nice to someone. You know, I've been practicing a little more. We stayed in the little hotel, and I went down to the thing this morning to check out. And the lady was one of those ladies who tries so hard to be perfect. You could just see it all in her aura. She had the perfect hairdo. She'd had her plastic surgery right on schedule. And, you know, she was really like her hair, you know, everything was perfect. She had, didn't have an extra ounce of fat anywhere on her. You know, she was like really outwardly, she had it all together. You know, she just looked so perfect. But I could just feel, bless her heart, she was so tense trying to keep it all perfect that my heart just went out to her. You know, there we were standing there paying for our room, and I thought, oh my gosh, this poor woman. So I just said one or two nice things to her. I don't remember what it was. Isn't it a nice day? Or, you know, nice color of your shirt or whatever. But suddenly she stopped forgetting, you know, she stopped remembering how she wasn't as perfect that morning as she hoped, and she just relaxed a little bit, you know, just that little bit of kindness, and she just got a smile on her face. You know, it just doesn't take much. As I was experimenting this week, it was really kind of fun, you know, pre-getting ready, and I know the homework comes later, but I would encourage you to, you know, look for ways to be kind. And just observe what happens when you do that. I know it always makes my day a whole lot happier. Tandava said I was going to talk about the arts. I'm not sure I'm going to go that grand. But I was thinking about kindness, and I was thinking, well, at Ananda, what things have I found that were just that kind of simple kindness? And there's a little song. Swami Kriyananda wrote this song called Channels. And in the song, people break into groups often, and they sing a little ditty about trees and about mountains and about rivers. And it just goes on with what nature gives to us and to tune into nature more. He actually wrote it with a conscious effort, though it's almost childlike in its words, to help us tune in to the blessing of nature and to appreciate how Divine Mother has made such a lovely world for us. And to he said that we're at a point in our planet, in our world, where, as he put it, the nature devas are starting to leave in different areas because they're not being appreciated, they're not being loved, they're not being cared for. So he wrote this song so everyone would think about that a little more. And one of the phrases is about flowers. And it says, flowers so soft and fragile stay fragrant though pressed to the ground. May we thus learn forbearance, for in kindness love is found. For in kindness love is found. And just think about flowers. And the little things that get in your mind over time with the teachings. You know, we've got this weighty knowledge of all the wonderful aspects of yoga and the Kriya Yoga and the lineage and the niyamas and the yamas. There's a whole body of work that helps us transform ourselves in every possible way. But sometimes it's just the little ones that just hang around and I find I can pick up and use anywhere. And that whole image of being a flower, of just being, you know, open and kind of tender to life. And what can happen? The worst that can happen when you're tender is you can get hurt, you know, because someone can step on you. And in fact, probably they will. That's part of living on this planet. And you know, if you're tender and sensitive, you get your feelings hurt, you know, often. But just like a flower, it has helped me a lot to think, so what if somebody does this, that, or the other? So what if I don't like it, or my feelings are hurt, or my body's not working, or whatever? So what? May we thus learn forbearance. for in kindness love is found. There's a story of Swamiji in a physical body story. He was in Assisi, and he bit into a piece of hard bread and broke a tooth off. And they took him to the dentist, and the dentist said, "Oh, this is going to be big. We have to take it down to the gum line. We have to deaden it. We have to take out the nerve. We have to put in a cap. We have to put in a post. We have to do, come back 5 or 6 times, and we'll get it all done." And Swami said, "You know, I'm really busy. This is a long trip. Let's just do it all today." And the man kind of said, "Oh, no, 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 we can't." "No," Swami said, "it's fine. I know about dental work. It's okay. I can do it." So because he's studied and because he's thought of others all of his life and been expansive, he said, "You know, I'm writing something. I don't want to take Novocaine, so don't give me any Novocaine." The doctor said, "Oh, no, I don't think that's going to work." "No, no, 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 I want you to." And so the doctor gets in there and starts doing his work, and you can imagine, you know, what pain that might be. But Swamiji said, "All I did is I thought about what I was writing." You know, he put his mind to a place that was more expansive than the body, that was about giving inspiration to others, that was about enjoying something in the music or the book he was writing. He just was able, through practice, to take his mind to another place, his thoughts. And as Tandava was saying, you know, the body was just a little point in space of his whole reality that was going on. And he was actually able to do the whole thing without Novocaine. He said the doctor, he had some friends in the room with him, and they were sort of getting white-knuckled looking at him. And the doctor got to the point where he was taking the nerve out. And he took the nerve out, and he dangled it in front of Swamiji. Like, you know, Swamiji didn't flinch. You know, he just kept thinking about what he was thinking about above the body that was going on. There's a story about Yogananda. He was building something in Southern California, and it involved having a big wishing well. And the well turned up, and people were carrying it, and he was walking with them. And it dropped, and it dropped on his toe. And it was, I don't know, 6, 7 people were carrying it. It was huge, heavy, real, made of stone kind of wishing well. And Yogananda said, "Watch," because he was always teaching. That was his job. So he had monks and people around him that were helping. He said, "Watch, I'll show you." He said, "I'll put my attention, my mind on my toe where I just dropped it and see what happens." He did put his consciousness and attention, and his face took on, you know, the grimace of intense pain, and, you know, they could see that he was in great pain. He said, "Now observe." He put his attention right here at the point between the eyebrows with such complete concentration. You know, his face became serene, he had no pain, he didn't experience pain, and no one, and they could all see that he wasn't in pain. So the ability to expand one's reality beyond the physical body is a handy tool to have. And I love these lessons. They start out so simple, and then they get into the depths very soon. He gets into karma in this particular lesson and says, "As we treat others, so will we be treated." And I find it so true, and encourage everybody to just try that. You know, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. It works most of the time. It really does. You know, people are a lot kinder to people who are kind to others. It's just the subtle laws of magnetism apply, where that which you give out creates a resonance and a magnetic field that draws to it that very same vibration. So, you know, it pays to be kind. There was a person in the community who was going through a very difficult time, and they had done something, they'd made a mistake some years earlier. It was a bad mistake, and they felt very badly about it. And then something happened, and they made the same mistake again. And the first time, Swami was very kind and easy. And the second time, the person was just devastated with guilt and, you know, sort of contracting on that feeling of, "I'm not good, I did a bad thing, you know, how horrible of me." They were just contracting and contracting, and Swamiji talked to the person on the phone and really let him have it. He said, "You have disappointed me. You shouldn't have done this." And the person said, I didn't feel, and I felt completely free and clear when he was giving me the riot act, scolding me over the phone. And all I could say was, yes, sir, you're right. Yes, you're right. I could just see that I had done it. He was scolding me. But there was a blessing behind it and a kind of a kindness that Swamiji knew that's what that person needed to get free from that spiral of going down, down, down with I did it bad and I'm a bad person, that contractive kind of thing. Let's see what else is here. In the last few years of Swami's life, he would, anywhere he would go and start talking, he would start on some subject and he'd go, and then often he would just start weeping and he would just say, I feel so much bliss, I can't really talk right now. And we'd all kind of wait, you know, some tears would fall and we'd kind of be with him in that, and then he'd go back and continue telling his story. But, you know, many of us were, what is that like to have that kind of bliss where the tears just roll down your eyes? You know, you just can't even contain it. He said, I can't contain my bliss. And here he says, kindness is a highway to that bliss, that our true soul nature is bliss. And kindness is a highway to there. Because God is kind, isn't he? I mean, really, he gives us this world. He gives us even the tests that make us stronger, even the things that don't go well, even the olives on the pizza, so that we realize what's trying to happen here. What am I supposed to learn? How can I overcome my aversions? How can I be free? How can I live in that bliss? And kindness is just a little touch of that, a little taste of that. Well, the art that Tandava referred to, I just have another few minutes, so I'll contribute to his integrity by talking a little bit about the arts. There was a sculpture in Kauai that Swamiji would see year after year. He used to visit there on holiday after he finished a big project and wanted to relax. He'd take people with him. And it was a whole series of pipes. There's these little shops, these little boutiques, and, you know, they have all the lovely hibiscus colored shirts and floral Hawaiian wear and, you know, everything that's just relaxed and lovely and natural. And these pipes were like chartreuse and olive green. Oh dear, Tandava, don't ever go to Kauai. And orange, and they just were an anomaly in the middle of this little green boutique area with, you know, plumeria earrings. And Swamiji just noticed, where is art going? You know, what's happening with art? It seems like it's following a downward track the way much of society is doing. It's a real purpose. And so he felt part of his mission, too, was to remind people, like from the age of Greece, that art is a divine aspiration toward a reminder of the ideal, a reminder of our true nature as, you know, God-men, as perfect creatures full of joy, full of love, that really is the role that art ought to be playing. Not to take a beautiful natural place and make it look ugly just to draw attention to the artist, you know, or the paint they happen to have that day, but to be conscious about what we're doing in art. And the art and consciousness movement is something that Ananda does really well here, here and all over the world. And for those of you who are newer, come around to some of the artistic things, because you do feel this undercurrent of kindness. You know, to be kindly in our humor is another way. We all love a good joke, but to have a joke on somebody else, it doesn't feel so good as when we're having a joke that augments that person's goodness, that calls attention to that person's goodness. So I think I did it with art for now, and I will artfully turn over the mic on time.
We good, sound-wise? Should I be kind to all of you and let you stand up for a couple of minutes? Take a little stretch. In fact, for those of you who know it, we can do a little bit of super conscious living exercises. For those of you who don't think we're nuts, but why don't we just stand in place and do a couple minutes of I am awake and ready. 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 Okay, one more, just because of our lesson today. I am positive, energetic, enthusiastic. 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 Okay, great. I've always likened that, all of you know, that I'm a physician. And when you do neurology exams on somebody, it's really weird. You know, you're saying, open your eyes, squeeze them shut, stick your tongue out, blow up your cheeks. And people always feel so silly, but I always say to them, well, I'll do it with you, so you're looking at me. And I feel that way about the super conscious living exercise. Particularly the first time people do them, you say, you got to be kidding. But, you know, inevitably, in every class I've ever taught over all these years, more than anything else, even more than the beloved Hung Saw, which is, of course, the pearl of Med 1, people come back, they love these energization exercises. Because, you know, when you have to get up at 4:35, 5:30 in the morning, and you stand up for a minute, and you say, I'm awake and ready, really changes your energy. You are awake and ready. And I've been listening to Tandava and Lahari talk, so it's completely changed what I'm going to say to you. Because I want to, you know, what Swamiji's done in this lesson, which you've all had an opportunity to look at, is I think he did A through Z, but if he didn't get to Z, it's close. And somebody help me, are there 24 or 26 letters in the alphabet? I forget, but somewhere around there. So, you know, it's a lot of points, and it's just like that. And it would be silly for us, any one of us, and good for Tandava and Lahari. Nobody's done that, to stand up and say, and now be kind in this way, and now be kind in that way, which is really a lot of how this is written. Remember last week I said he was going to find 6 lessons, 6 weeks, which he felt people could digest. That's what he felt, it was a digestible amount of information that one could then grow from. And he was going to give us pearls, 6 weeks of pearls. So when you just read these, you know, cooperate with other people. I don't even remember all of what he says, but again, as I said last week, and I don't want to simply repeat myself, but it's very important to understand the essence of what's trying to be said here. These lessons are so simple that if we're not careful, we're going to miss the pearls here. So, and it's very easy to do it with these. I was reading this whole lesson again today, and I thought this could be presented in such a way that it would be easy to think or to have an experience of course I'm kind, and everybody knows that. And the other thing that I think can happen is when I'm sitting and I'm listening to all these stories, we tell a lot of stories about Swami Kriyananda and Yogananda and other great saints because they exemplify that really the perfect way to live our lives. If you want this to happen, this being know love, feel peace, be contented, here are ways to live. But it can give us the sense that this is something that they do and not something that we can do. And I want to dispel that myth. I'm going to tell you a few stories. But I want to start out by saying this. Swamiji said, I'm writing these lessons specifically to let everybody know that by exerting the proper will and by having right attitude, you can have anything and everything in your life that you think you want. Now, sometimes we can look and want a house, but we want a house ultimately because, or whatever the material possession is, it doesn't matter, because we think that's going to make us happy, or that's going to help us feel joyful, or uplifted, or we're going to have fun doing things. We don't always think of the deeper meaning, but really, as we all know, I mean, Swamiji says it, but everybody said it, we've heard it many different times in our life in many different ways. All human beings want the same few things, and two of them being that we want to be able to know love and we want to avoid pain. Excuse me. I ate a very salty meal today, and I told my friends who I was with, later tonight I'm going to be so thirsty, and I'm going to be wondering, why am I so thirsty? But it was in my mind, and I remembered. It's hitting me now. Whatever it is that we think we want, and sometimes we just live a little less consciously, so we get stuck on this place of thinking that what we want is actually on this material plane or in this physical world. And fair enough, it's not like that's bad. It's not a bad thing to want more clothes, more shoes, a nicer car, a nicer house. None of it's bad. Of course, the only problem is when we think that that's what's going to bring us our happiness, but we get confused that way. Many of us do. I mean, we all do, is the truth. What Swamiji is speaking to when he says you can, by applying a lot of willpower and will, which he also will say is willingness, and by having the right attitude, that you can have anything that you want in your life. Those are his words. I mean, if I quote them, he says, my purpose in writing these lessons is to show you how by sheer power of our own will and with right attitude, we can succeed. He says it far better than I was going to say. That I was saying it, we can succeed in every aspect of our lives. So as we're thinking about kindness, and it's just so easy to say a random act of kindness gets you a lot. You smile at somebody, you can do your own experiment. You walk out and start smiling at people, or just making the slightest little bit of eye contact, not frighteningly so, but a little bit, really moving through the world heart first, literally, I mean this literally, with good posture, heart wide open, and having nice energy on your face, and the world opens to you. It simply does. You can just try it. It's a very simple example of will and right attitude. But he's saying you can succeed in every aspect of your life. And this phrase that Lahari quoted from, and I don't have it completely in my mind right now, but it doesn't matter. The goal of this life is bliss. We don't use that word very much in the English language outside of temples. But the goal of this life is to know true joy. And again, sometimes we get a little misguided, but we're all looking to be happy. We're all looking to feel good. And he says, kindness is the highway to bliss. That's what he says. So we have to ask ourselves, what does this bit about being kind mean? Why would we want to practice it? Why do we want to remember it? Why do we want to decide how we can do it and bring it into the world to take us to where we think we want to go? And both Tandava and Lahari touched on this and talked about it, but I'd like to just try and bring it into just very simple understanding of energy. An understanding that every single thing in the world is energy. All energy that comes down to the same smallest particle. Many of you in this room, if you've ever taken a class from me, you've heard me say this, some of you many, many, many times as I look around, but it's essential to understand everything is energy, and what we now know is everything is made out of exactly the same energy. There's not more than one kind of energy. Whatever the smallest particle is that the physicists have discovered now, right? A couple years ago it was neutrinos. It's much smaller now. Energy can neither be created nor destroyed, but it can always be transformed. Always. That first law of thermodynamics doesn't say under certain circumstances if it's a good person, some of the times, but not other times. It says energy can always be transformed. And right there is the essence of every spiritual lesson, because it's so filled with hope. It says, no matter what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, what's happening in your life, we have the ability to transmute and transform energy. So it's no small thing when we're saying now we're going to behave in kind ways. We're going to start reminding ourselves. And this kindness can be simple. I had an experience once, and I want you to know that I'm consciously telling you experiences in my life. Not to say, look at me, quite the contrary. Rather to say, if these things can happen to me, they can happen to anybody. I am not Swami Kriyananda. I am not these masters. I'm so far away from them, I feel grateful to have been in their presence and to be learning any lessons. So look at what can happen for somebody like me. So many stories. One time I was in Ohio at these medical meetings, and I was there with a friend who I really like a lot, and we were very happy to be there together. We were really excited about learning all this medicine, but we were also thoroughly enjoying each other's company. For 3 or 4 days, we were each in this hotel. And we were just in that place, and probably in some ways being ourselves. Every time we would go up to the desk, we would smile, we would say something nice to people, not to be manipulative, but because that was the way the energy was flowing. You know, somebody would drop something in the lobby, you pick it up, you open a door for people. We're just sort of being ourselves. The day comes for us to leave, and we find out that our flight is delayed by like 4 or 5 hours, something significant. And we were in some town in Ohio. I mean, wasn't going to be a lot to do there. So I went up to the woman behind the desk, and I said, you know, our flight's delayed. I didn't even get any more out. She said, honey, don't you worry about a thing. We have a whole new clean room for you. Here's the key. You two go up there. We had had separate rooms. You know, we were not staying. You two go up there, and we're going to take care of you. I'm up there. 10 minutes later, there's a knock on the door. They walk in with these platters of cheese trays and vegetable trays. 10 minutes later, they come in with a bottle of champagne. I mean, it's the middle of the afternoon. You know, I have so many stories like this, not because I'm out in the world trying to get anything. And I'll bet when we have our discussion, other people will tell stories because it's energy. And energy can be transformed, and it is transforming. So these small things, these being polite, being conscious, being aware, just simply what it means to stand back and open a door for somebody or let them go first or notice a need that they have. Or even as Lahari was saying, I have a brother who's been very sick this year. He's gone through a lot, and it started with a horrible cancer, culminated in his losing a leg. He's very stubborn, and he's a very difficult man. He has a lot of trouble in the world. Things never go right for him, and no matter what, he's never been able to see that he's completely and totally magnetizing all this difficult energy. But I love him. He's my baby brother, who's now 61. And I have taken care of him all his life, and I just adore him, and I feel, you can feel it. I mean, even as I speak, he may as well be my child. But he is difficult. So I went and visited him. I was there when he had his leg amputated, really walked through the whole thing with him. And I said to him, you know, Rick, you're going to really have to try and accept this now, open your heart. I mean, I had days with him. I don't want to make it sound trite. It was very profound what was going on. I said, can you try and play by the rules this one time? Don't act out of anger. You're in trouble now, but they're all telling you you have a chance. You could get better. I stay there for a week, right? I mean, his whole family was there. We're paying off all of his bills. We're putting money in his accounts. We're loving him. We don't leave him alone. We stay up all night. His insurance company's investing literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in him. And now he doesn't have a leg, and he doesn't have a prosthesis yet. And he gets in his car. He wants to go somewhere. And his children say to him, Dad, we don't really think it's a good idea for you. So they don't want to drive him. So he storms out as much as one can storm who's 10 days into crutches and out of balance like that. Gets in his car, really angry, goes to get out, and he falls. Splits his whole wound open, and lays on the ground. His cell phone breaks for 3 hours before anybody will stop because he looked like a wreck. When I heard that story, I called him and I said to him, you know, I'm going to do you and me a favor. You know I love you. You know I care about you. I don't want to have to be angry with you. I don't want to have to tell you how you should live your life. You made this decision. I don't want to talk to you anymore right now. Don't call me. When I'm ready, I'll call you. But until then, I just don't want to go here with you. And people in my life couldn't believe I did that. Made a lot of people very angry, actually. But I felt totally at ease doing that. I just knew it was the right thing. And about 5 weeks later, you know, you're sitting at home, you don't have a leg, you have a big cancer in your lungs, you have no money. This is a difficult story. And the person in the world who's loved you the most and been there for you doesn't call you for 5 weeks. It was a big deal. 5 weeks later, I called him and I said, how you doing, honey? And we just started talking. But at the end of the conversation, he said to me, I want to thank you. I mean, it was really a remarkable, first of all, those words have not often come through his lips. But besides that, I mean, in the face of all of this, because we can't confuse, as Swamiji says in this lesson, what the ego needs with what is necessarily kind. Kindness isn't what somebody wants. Kindness sometimes can be what we know that they need in the moment, and sometimes it's not easy. So why I'm saying it only right now to say, it doesn't always look beautiful. It's not always happy endings. It's really opening your heart and letting energy flow through the heart to everyone else in the world and through an energetic understanding. Be kind. Live connected. Learn how to transform energy that's jealous, greedy, hateful, condemning, right? And this doesn't speak about the outcomes, because there are times in your life where you have to pick up the phone and say to your brother, don't call me, I don't want to talk to you. I'm not interested in being a part of this. I don't want my life to be affected by your insanity anymore, not in this moment. Sometimes it just looks like that. It doesn't matter what it looks like. What matters is, are you moving from your heart, and is it truly an act of kindness? Now, we can't always know that. It doesn't always mean relationships last. It doesn't always mean businesses succeed. It doesn't always mean anything about what's going on out there. It means, how is it that we practice moment by moment, often in very small ways, opening a door for somebody, today I'll do something nice. And why does that matter? Because it gets energy flowing in the right direction. Every nice thing we do draws energy up through our astral spine, up into the heart, and ultimately up here to the point between the eyebrows. Every time you take a little step into the light, into anything good, it does not have to be magnanimous. Most of us can't do magnanimous things. That's not who we are. Most of us in this room are not the masters. We are just putting one proverbial foot in front of the other towards being the best we can be. And as we do that, in ways that we can't imagine, we create a flow of energy. Yogananda says, the greater the will. It means the greater the amount of power, will, and as I said before, not just strong willpower, not just like that, some willpower, but willingness. The greater the will, the greater the flow of energy. And this is not always easy. It's not always easy to do the right thing, the kind thing. You know, there are times where you just want to yell at somebody. there are times where you just want to be mean. I was just telling somebody the other day, wasn't two, 6 weeks ago, I got so angry at somebody, I started having fantasies of beating them up. I've never hit anybody in my life. Look at me, you know? I mean, how scary could I be? But I was actually having those fantasies. You know, it's not, it takes a lot of energy to begin to move ourselves in the right direction. So we start by doing something easy, by saying something nice to a waitress, by saying to somebody, boy, you just did a great job. That was so wonderful. Or when it's the truth, you look lovely today, you know? Or, hey, I just saw what you did for that person. It's so easy. And then it gets bigger. Then sometimes you fly to Pittsburgh and you sit in a chair in an intensive care unit for a full week because your brother needs you to be right in that chair for a full week. Because every time you go to leave, he gets scared. It gets bigger. It gets bigger. Sometimes it takes you away from what you know you need. But every time we reach out, our own little egotistical contractive, as Tandava was saying, sense of this little self that wants what it wants when it wants it, that is worried about what I need, what's important for me, how do I feel now? When you start moving with generosity of spirit, which is really what we're talking about, when you start actually truly considering what other people need and what is not just good one-on-one, but remember the word dharma from last week. How would I move in the world right now that will have that ripple effect and be good for everybody in the whole world? Because that's what it is. You know, this is a silly thing. We've heard it many times. You take one drop of water out of the entire ocean, and the whole ocean has to reconfigure itself around that. That is simply the truth. And it's the same way with doing something kind. You put that energy out, and it affects everybody, everything in the whole world. We can't move without being that way. So when we look at somebody and we say, you look so lovely today. What a difference than looking across the room at somebody, I'm telling on myself again, and saying, dear Lord, who dressed that man today? What did he do? Look in a mirror and think, gee, I look wonderful. I'll put on these plaid pants and these bright orange shirts. I mean, how many times I did that till I started understanding about energy? Now when I find myself going to be critical, I immediately say to myself, Shanti, look at the soul. Look what a beautiful soul you're looking at, no matter what. Who cares what clothes they're in? Who cares what body they're in? Who cares about all these things that we spend so much time in the world thinking about? We then becoming part of that downward pulling energy. It is so much more lovely, so much more healing, so much more generous, giving, healing, not just of us, but literally of the whole world, to notice what is right and good and positive and creative and uplifting and will make things better, not worse. I'll tell you one more quick story, then I'm going to stop. I worked at the county hospital for a number of years. These people are in trouble. I don't have to tell you any stories, but just think like my brother Rick. I mean, they're in a lot of trouble up there. And they come in, and they're in a rough system. You know, it can take you... You can have whatever severe osteoarthritis of your knee and desperately need a knee replacement. Nobody's trying to do anything wrong. Everybody only wants to do what's right. But you might have to wait 2 years to get your knee replaced in that system. It's just so many operating rooms, so many orthopedists, so much money in the county, whatever it is. And so people are a little edgy. There was a man that I saw there for a period of, well, I wound up seeing him for many years. Severe diabetic, went into a diabetic coma on Route 101, crashed his car, killed somebody, paralyzed his friend who was in the car with him. And this man was angry. I mean, he never recovered. I'm sure nobody ever helped him through what that means, that that happened. Obviously, it wasn't a volitional act. He lost his job. He was a very successful carpenter. Nobody, the union wouldn't insure him anymore. I mean, the story goes on and on and on. Nothing went right for this man. Nothing. He had no money. He used to walk 12 miles to see me and 12 miles to get home because he couldn't afford the bus. He couldn't get the insulin that he knew would help him, and I'm sure he was right about it. And one day I said to him, you know, I have an idea. You've been coming to see me for a year. You're angry all the time. I understand why you're frustrated. I don't want to condone the anger, but I understand. I think you ought to start volunteering. He said to me, what? I said, yeah, I think you need to go out and find a volunteer job. He starts pounding his fist on the desk, screaming at me at the top of his lungs. All the nurses come running, and Dr. Rubenstein, are you okay? I looked at him, I said to him, am I okay? No, you're not okay. I said to him, no, I'm not okay. You know, this is how it was. I was calm. It's a true story. And when I finally said to him, I'm leaving the room, you're being very threatening. I certainly don't deserve your anger. I've been here serving you for a year. So I'm leaving, but I'm going to tell you again. Get yourself a position of volunteering. It's the only way things are going to start going right for you in the world. He missed his next appointment, not surprisingly. But 6 months later, I saw him. And he came in, and he said to me, I'm not going to tell you things are great. They're not great. I was enraged with you. He said, I spent the first few weeks spending all of my time and energy being angry with you. I said, I sort of knew that would happen. And he said, and then I went to, I can't think of the name of this kitchen up in Redwood City, San Mateo area that feeds people, but it's very well known. And he said, 3 days a week I serve people lunch. And he said, you know, I got an appointment with the endocrinologist that I've been waiting for 2 years, and, you know, he's writing me a special dispensation to get my insulin that I need. And I mean, he said, even as he left jokingly, he said, I don't want to tell you things are too good. You know, don't get too happy for me here. But I followed him for 2 more years. You know, I mean, that simple thing of being able to say to somebody, give. Let energy start flowing. I said to him, you're like a cement block who wants something to come to you. We need to let energy start flowing. You need to give. If you start giving, there's room for things to start coming to you. It is always that way. That's what kindness is. It's starting that energy flowing so that there's room for everybody to have exactly what they need in the world, because energy flows and things start moving in the right direction. Okay. I think I've been talking for more than 20 minutes. Something they'd like to say, or again, anything. A story, a question, a dilemma. Brandon.
Just a little tiny thing, and it's just more interesting, and that is a situation that occasioned my being a little bit more thoughtful and kind. It was last Sunday after everyone was gone. I was just cleaning up the steps out front a little bit, but normal city people, you know, were walking by from time to time. And I don't know what my frame of mind was. Maybe it's like, well, I'm here clearly with the church, so, you know, but it wasn't like I was putting it on or anything or felt I had to. It simply like just occasioned it as a, you know, way of saying it. And so just people walk by and I just, you know, give them, just look at them and say hi and stuff. And, you know, they would most often reciprocate, you know, so it was just very nice. So I'm going to hang out there more often maybe, I don't know.
You know, I heard somebody saying when we were starting, before class started, Tandifa was asking people about if anybody did their homework. I just say this. And what a couple people said, it was amazing how hard it was to stay conscious of some of the ideas. I think, did you say that, Shinamor? Can you?
Yeah, we slide into habit so rapidly. You can almost, if you're just on it, you can actually watch your mind go just like this. It's almost like going to sleep. It's the weirdest thing. So you have to consciously keep coming back to that one thing, or give yourself something that you can do to break through that habit. I went out last night buying things, and the first clerk, there was almost no one in the place, and So I did my best to really concentrate on her and see her as a human being, you know, as another soul. And she was just real happy, and we had a good time. And then I went to the next place, and there was an older man trying to run his credit card, and he was taking forever. And I just stood there as quietly as I could without moving, and you could see the clerk just, you know, beginning to go like this. And so when she got to me, it was grim. And I just looked at her again, and I just saw her as a human being, and she was just really sweet. And then the last place we went to, two Spanish guys were doing the, you know, the checking. And you could just see that they saw us as white people, and, you know, they expected to see that kind of response as they're not human kind of thing, you know. It was really interesting. And so I just saw them as human beings, and they just opened up, and we were just, you know, friends. We were just buddies. It was just really sweet. And one of them found one of the packages I'd bought had a little crack in it. He said, "Oh, let me get you a new package." And he went running off and came back with it. It was, you know, just those kind of things. You have to pick them up and do them. Otherwise, right. You're gone.
The reason why I didn't want to just move so quickly beyond you, but I love those stories. But the reason I brought that up and handed Chidambar the microphone is because that's what happens when you get conscious, like that kind of awareness. Not that you might not even be nice other times, but you're not even aware. But bringing our awareness to it just changes. There's such beautiful stories. Did you want to say something? Yeah.
I wanted to ask Brandon, how were you feeling while you were cleaning up out there?
Pretty joyful.
Yeah.
It was flying around out there. I came down when it was doing that. It was like this little angel wing thing going back and forth.
It is just, you know, it's just absolutely amazing. You know, like Sunday after service, you know, just walk into the, you know, the bagel bar thing. And, you know, I'm just like, just blissed out. You know, and like this week, two people came up and said, "Gosh, you look really something." And it's like, yeah, no kidding, jeez.
I think I can pretty much guarantee he's not on drugs.
No, I'm not. got the good drug.
Anybody else?
I went to a retreat earlier this last year. It was a 5-day silent retreat. And my usual, I'll call it a habit, is to be really focused and serious and really concentrated and attempting to go as deep as possible, and that's what I did. And but then I went on one near the end of the year, same type of retreat and a different location. But it was I felt very different than I did the first part of the year. I'm not exactly sure why, but in this experience, and I was at the Asilomar, and it was, again, a silent retreat, and it was a lot more emphasis this time, though, about letting go of dualism and getting into oneness. And so I, for some reason, started smiling and looking at the people, but we're silent, right? And so there's a tendency when you're being silent, not to do that, because it seems like I'm interfering with other people's thoughts or silence. But people started smiling back at me so big. And I could see they were walking along seriously. And I'm like, I'm not like smiling really big. It's just kind of like that, which is not, you know, my huge big thing, but it was like, a big thing for silent. And one after another, after another, after another, after another, it was just everywhere like that, at the desk, at the everywhere, and it was like, and you know what happened? Pretty soon, I started feeling like I had merged with them. I've started feeling the oneness of it all. So, you know, that's what comes from this opening the heart and the kindness that comes. You just really do begin to merge with God, the God in each soul. Or, I mean, I started out with trees. I'm still, you know, have the biggest fondness for trees and being one with them. But now, this time I did it with people. So it was like, wow. So,
you know, the point that Jill's making, the idea, the understanding, which is the essence of this teaching this week, if you read this chapter on kindness, that the only way we can really, truly be connected with each other is right from that place in our very center. And very often we're out here at the periphery of our being trying to connect. And it's too flimsy. There's nothing there. There's nothing of any real energetic substance to allow us to connect. But when you found yourself resting at the very core of who you are, and you're in the company of other people who are at least making the effort to do that, you feel the depth of connectedness, soul to soul, not person to person. So I think what you're saying is so profound and so right, and that happens from the heart. It does. Even though the goal of the spiritual life is to move up here, that connection starts from here. So soon everything disappears, but that one place, center, everywhere, circumference, nowhere. Laura, do you want to say anything?
I was just thinking that we're talking about ways to be expansive, and so that's the way we get to our center, and that's when you're in your center, then you feel bliss. Is that it?
That's it. You know, one of the very important lessons, the whole point that Swami makes in a chapter in the Material Success Course, that it's not about this, but it's enough about it. It's all about right action. Is that, you know, this is the first level of us evolving as a soul on our way back to God. You know, wherever we've been for however many lifetimes, where we have an ego is when we're born as a human being. And he talks about the fact that the ego is exactly from the instant of conception. It's the ego that leads, from the instant of conception, that we're into this duality, as if everything's separate in the world and totally away from the oneness that you were describing. And how much the ego can draw us into that. Me, mine, I need this. He said, but if you turn it around, the way of use, what the other side of what happens with the ego and the human condition is that because we suffer, and it's not just the momentary suffering, but the depth of suffering that the soul remembers lifetime after lifetime. We're hurt, we're betrayed. We, you know, as we say every week in the festival, even though repeatedly we lost everything we had, this is, again, over lifetimes. It's not, we can feel it in this little light. He said that very same ego starts telling us, I don't want to suffer anymore. There's got to be something else. So in a way, it's through the ego that it's at the very center that draws us to want to know more about bliss, which I think is really what you're talking about. You know, just so it's the ego, we can see it as being a bad thing and as separating and part of duality. but it is really because we have an ego that we're driven to know God. Very subtle point he's making, and I'm not sure I'm doing it justice, but
some of you may have made me, maybe heard me say this before, but what makes me feel connected the most with everybody else is singing in the choir, and it's, I can't help but smile, and it's so joyful that I have that feeling of, you know, oneness. Well, I can't sing in the choir all the time, but as much as I can, I love to do that. But I really can get connected doing that because it's it takes me out of myself. And it's just wonderful.
Can you say more about how it takes you out of yourself?
Well, it's because, for one thing, some of the choir people are here, you have to, as much as you can, tune in to everybody else who's singing. You don't just sing your, you know, your part. And then Swami's music is so inspiring, which is what we mostly do. So I feel like I'm in a different place. Maybe somebody else who sings in the choir would like to make a comment about that. Anybody else?
Yeah, there is something about the, it's the shared energy. There's singing and then there's the music that we sing, which is really very uplifting. Swami Kriyananda had a particular gift and wrote hundreds of songs, many of which we sing and have learned over the years. And it's it actually relates to something else. Some number of years ago, and I don't know the exact context, somebody was visiting Ananda Village, which is the original Ananda community in the Sierra Nevada foothills, and observing the people mentioned that they're just a group of wonderful people here. He mentioned this to Swami Kriyananda. And Swami Kriyananda said, yes, they are wonderful people, but what really makes them wonderful is what they're doing. And that's a matter of consciousness. That's a matter of what... So at Ananda, we have this great example of collectively attuning ourselves to a particular vibration. So that's what we're doing. Singing is a vehicle that enables us to attune ourselves to that vibration, as are many other opportunities to serve. Central to all of this is the idea of serving. Earlier today, I was feeling sick, I was tired, et cetera, et cetera, and I was scheduled to cook in our community kitchen, which I do once a month. We have the opportunity to cook dinner for a group of people who come to dinner. Every night there's dinner and then we rotate in. So, but I knew from past experience that if I just got in the car and got to the kitchen, everything would be fine. And indeed it was. As soon as I started putting out energy, realizing that others were going to benefit from this. I mean, it's just so simple. And it wasn't even conscious, oh, others are going to benefit. It's just like, this is great. Because I love doing it. I love going to that kitchen. I love cooking for other people. And lo and behold, someone came up and she was helping me. And normally I cook alone. And somebody else came up and she was helping me. And this one was chopping vegetables and this one was making salad dressings. And before I knew it, it was done. And it was, you know, I was feeling great. People came, we ate dinner, we talked. But it's that. It's just, it's like the super conscious exercises, right? How long did it take? It was like 3 minutes. Awake and ready, positive, energetic, enthusiastic, and you are. It's amazing. So it's that. It's like, how many times do I have to remind myself? It's, you know, like, just please, do it. Do something. Right? Put out energy. You're feeling lousy, put out energy. Your life is like a block of concrete, start volunteering. It's such good counsel that we can give to one another. And, you know, this kindness, it's about the best thing going, I must say.
I haven't been having a bad day.
Is this going?
I've been having a bad month. And I really didn't want to come to class tonight. I just wanted to stay home and hide under the bed. But I have this spiritual journal that I keep. And when things aren't going right, or even when they are, I make a log on what's going on and what I do, and then the end result. And so I was skimming through it, and I was looking up dark times or when things weren't going right, and then what I did to make it better, and then what the end result was. And so I had to get out of bed, change my clothes, and come here. I just barely got here on time. And so I have another entry tonight to verify what to do when this happens and what the end result is, because I don't feel like hitting anybody anymore.
Actually, that's
and usually
wonderful.
It's myself I'm hitting. So what Steve was just saying is perfect. You know, you just got to go do something.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
I'll get back to being in the choir. And I fell in love with Swami's music right off the bat, way back when. And so, I just thought, I'd love to sing in the choir. And my first attempt, I think there were only 12 people in the choir. And, I mean, I was just, but I wanted to do it so badly that I decided to go ahead. Well, it was just, I didn't know what an alto was. I was trying to, there was no support like there is today. We were only 12, but somehow I managed. I got up there and I sang with these other people. So then years went by and I didn't continue. The choir was kind of, you know, not foremost like it is now. And so, but I still wanted to sing. So there were four attempts. We'd have these choirs for practices for new people who want to sing. And but it didn't happen. So then I took the trip to India, and I thought, I'm going to sing. This is going to be my top priority. And so I got back in November. It wasn't for that year. The following year, I finally joined the choir. But the gift here is Ananda giving us the gift, the kind gift of saying, you can do it, giving us the opportunity. And it's just been bliss, really, to be in the choir. And now I really look forward again to doing the oratorio this year. And I really, like I say, Ananda has given us that kind gift with everything. Gives us a chance. Oh, you can do it. You try. Might not work out, but you try it. It gives you the courage. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how we grow. And then we're less and less afraid to take the steps that we need to take.
That's very lovely. I'll just say this one thing, then we'll probably stop for the evening, but just in terms of what Annette's saying, that part of the work on a spiritual path and part of the gift of being amongst people who are serious about being on a spiritual path is that while we don't always succeed and we're all here. I remember when I moved into the community, I thought, oh, great. I'm going to get away from all that human interaction stuff. And yeah, no way. I mean, it's a big bunch of personalities trying to know God, but it just still is what it is. But the truth is that everybody is really trying to find God within and without. And we do things like this so that we stay conscious of it, so that we remind ourselves, I really do feel better when I get out of bed and I come. I feel better when I sing in the choir. I feel better just sitting amongst these people because they'll support me. They are really trying to see what is best in me and to help me live in terms of that. And I don't know that that's unique to Ananda. I'd like to think that's true of everybody who's making spiritual effort in life, but we could all speak to it in terms of Ananda. It's an extraordinary thing. That the whole purpose of the community is each person trying to find the divine. And so we're not really just dealing with each other down here, or we'd kill each other, and ourselves maybe too. But we're dealing up here. We meet in this common place, and it's transcendent, is really what it is. And then we get courage to sing in the choir, even if we're not the greatest singer, or, I mean, to really help ourselves expand because other people are seeing us expansively. I mean, talk about an act of kindness, really. It's beautiful. We see each other as being the biggest and the best that we can be.
Sure, of course. Speaking to the expansion of consciousness or just outwardness, several times, maybe four times, while singing in the choir, I lost consciousness of being myself singing in the choir. I wasn't thinking about me, how I was singing, what was coming up next. And essentially, it felt like everybody in the choir clicked. And there was, instead of 20, 24 voices, there was one voice. And it was not like it was Trish singing. I was both a drop in the ocean and the ocean singing, like it wasn't me doing the choir anymore. And it was a transcendent experience. It was like I got out of the little into the bigger for a little bit. Now, if I could always make it like that, I don't know. I don't know what it does. I'm sure other people have experienced it too. But
then you'd leave us. If you could always live there, you'd be God, and we wouldn't.
I just got the little inkling.
It's beautiful, though. Yeah. It's really lovely. Yeah. Okay, Marilyn, and then we better.
I've felt that when we do the Om, sometimes, you know, because it feels like just one.
All right, everybody, Om.